This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. I've gotten a hold of a brand new book. I've got to start reviewing some older books that are... I have a huge library of older books, and I think they're more useful for research. But the whole China thing since the Olympics has become such a big fad, and everyone's jumped on it, and entering China has become much easier, and I think everyone and their brother has jumped over to China to be a bit exotic. So the book I have today is called When China Rules the World, The End of the Western World and the Birth of a New Global Order, a very provocative title by Martin Jacque. And before I begin this book, the first thing I'm reminded of is Jonathan Spence's book, The Chen's Great Continent, China in Western Minds. And the reason this book comes to mind is because in that, Spence argues that the obsession, the interest in all things Chinese has a very strong cycle through Western history, ups and downs, and I feel we've just reached a kind of peak on this where everyone's crazy about it, everybody loves it, and then we're starting to get a little bit of overkill and maybe some pullback on that. I saw a South Park cartoon the other day, and in that cartoon, Nightmares of China Taking Over the World played a role. And this title of Martin Jacque's book, When China Rules the World, The End of the Western World and the Birth of a New Global Order, is a bit provocative. Obviously, this has a lot to do with selling books. I heard in a talk he had, he did say that he would have preferred to use a title, something like Chinese Hegemony, something like that, but it wouldn't have sold any books. So in this case, we end up with a book that has a very provocative title, but what's it really about? Well, that brings me to my second book it reminds me of. This book by Martin Jacque is very similar in tone to a book that I read back in 1989, which is called The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers by Paul Kennedy. And at that time, we were just at the peak of the obsession with Japan and how Japan was going to take over the world economically and then supposedly in all other ways. Now, that never came through. So in that book by Paul Kennedy, he had a really good argument. And the argument basically had three main points, that if you want to be a superpower, if you want to be a great power, and it looks like Japan was on the way to being a great power, you needed three main things. One, a strong economy. And of course, at that time and until now, Japan has a very strong economy. Strong military. Now, often we don't think of Japan post-war as having a strong military, but they are one of the largest. I think they're the top three military spending nations in the world, simply because their GDP is so large. And then number three, what you need is a culture that is easily exported and sought to be emulated by outsiders. And this is where I think Japan has kind of fallen down. The Japanese culture is not easy to export, even after almost 30 years later. We just are now getting a little bit of a feel of some things like anime and things like this come out of Japan. But that was back in the 70s, even beginning. I don't think it hasn't taken off in a huge way. It's just grown with other comic book popularities, graphic novels. So grabbing little bits and pieces of the culture is not enough. It's got to be a really mass export. And the Japanese culture is not well suited for that. And the Japanese themselves are not very anxious to do that. If we turn to China, however, Jacque's argument is that they have all these, and throughout, he doesn't say it so clearly, but throughout the whole book, these are the three points he keeps hammering away at. Now, in the book, it's an especially long book. I hate to push it on any readers thinking that's going to be an easy read. I enjoyed it. I read the audio, but the audio was like 24 hours long. The book's page length is 576 pages. Many people have commented it's overwritten. I think it easily could have been reduced to one-third of its length, because the part I found interesting, that I found insightful, it could be summed up maybe within 200, 250 pages or less. The book is published by Penguin Press, released, published in 2009. And the chapters, let me go over the chapters. He has two main parts. The first part is the end of the Western world. It's very scary sounding, isn't it? And then number two, the age of China. And inside here you have some chapters. Let me give you some titles to get a feel for the book. Chapter number one, The Changing of the Guard. Now that sounds a lot like Kennedy's book. Chapter number two, The Rise of the West. Chapter 3, Japan, Modern but Hardly Western. Chapter 4, China's Ignominy. I get this word wrong. Ignominy. Yeah. Contested Modernity is Chapter 5. Chapter 6 is China as an Economic Superpower. Chapter 7, Civilization State. Chapter 8, The Middle Kingdom Mentality. Chapter 9, China's Own Backyard. Chapter 10, China as a Rising Global Power. Chapter 11, When China Rules the World. And Chapter 12, Concluding Remarks. Eight differences that define China. When I read the book, I was really excited at first. It really got me interested, piqued my interest, really got me excited. I was very positive and motivated. And that is because the author very quickly jumps on the idea that what we're facing here is, number one, of course, an economic shift. And he just goes through the same old numbers everybody does. I mean, you get these numbers anywhere, and they're overwhelmingly obvious, black and white. More importantly than that, though, is what my research always deals with and what we deal with on Chinese Consumer Connection, and that is the assumption, the overriding assumption of modernity from the West as being the only modernity. And in a way, this is a concept that many people can't even begin to think about. I mean, modern is modern. Everybody says modern is modern, it's modern. That's what modern is. But they don't realize how much this concept of modernity, of modern, is actually very closely tied to culture and cultural assumptions that come basically from the core values of Western civilization and further trace back to Judeo-Christian Muslim values. And in this case, what we've grown up to call modern is very Western. So we kind of cut out the Islamic part there and just focus on the Western. And if anything, I think in the late 20th century, early 21st century, we've come to face that there are other forces in the world. Now, in the 1980s, we were smacked face to face with Japan's rising power and something that seemed very different. But rather than try to come to grips with a different modernity or to question modernity, we just kind of said, well, they are Western. I mean, go visit the cities. They look very Western. They live in Western ways, it seems like. And we never went much further than that. And Japanese researchers and scholars never really push very much in Western journals or in Western books to refute that. They kind of stay off on themselves in their own area. They publish in their own journals. And nobody was really called out on this. Now we have the same issue repeating only on a bigger basis. And in this case, the Chinese culture is very easily exported. Chinese people are very anxious to export it, very happy to export it. And we have a Chinese diaspora where we have Chinese that have spread all over the world everywhere, and they keep with them those core values, and they continue the assumption that they're part of that Chinese civilization. So this is basically what the book drives at. Martin Jack is saying that, look, there is a unified conceptualization, shared values amongst the Chinese diaspora that all link back to exactly what those values are now in China. And this is what we have to face, a separate and very different modernity. And that really rang my bell. I mean, that was really great. This is something that makes total sense. And that I'm always working on my research to push back on the assumptions that, you know, all marketing, all retailing must do something one way. We must all go to the Western perspective. Stores must have this kind of design. I mean, I've been in so many meetings and heard this nonsense over and over that when I read this book, it was a great release to say, wow, there's actually other Westerners that get the point, and this is great. Let me just quickly run through what the main points in the book are, and I think right away you understand, you can see that this is kind of a high-altitude political analysis. So what's it do for business people? Well, there are a lot of stories and little pieces of information, examples that do deal with business, and so you'll get something out of it. As far as research goes for business or marketers or consumer behavior, not a lot, but it does give you a good perspective on what are some of those underlying values, because even in consumer behavior area, I mean, we have things like country of origin and patriotism and nationalism and all these kinds of things can potentially play a huge role in marketing and consumer behavior. So just very quickly, some of the key points in the book, When China Rules the World. First one, as I've just mentioned, get ready for multiple modernities. And in fact, he calls it contested modernities. And that is that the Chinese assume that their modernity is correct, and Westerners will assume theirs are correct. And this is right on target. He likes to say that, you know, you can't go very far without a Chinese person telling you they have 5,000 years of history. And anyone who's lived in any Chinese cultural context, even if it's overseas, amongst the Chinese diaspora, you'll get this. It's just something that's automatically assumed. And so this is another point he has, which is you've got to stop thinking of China as being a nation state in the sense of the Western form, which is we have a governed, a class of people who are governing over everyone, and we have some kind of relationship of the governed and the governors doing the governing, and we have a lot of contractual basis to limit powers in the case of the United States, for example, the amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, these things that stop the government from going too far, and it's kind of an agreement. Look, I'll let you do this and make these decisions, we make these decisions, and in the end we can elect you there and you can do this. In the China case, this is just not going to be happening at all, because there isn't really a government ruling over a country, but rather it's a people or a race. And this, I know it sounds very strong, but this is something that's strong throughout his book, a thread that the Chinese see themselves as a race. And of course, that's the Han Chinese race. A lot of Chinese would probably openly disagree with this if you talk to them personally, but there's no doubt if you can get away with the generalization, this is generally true. The thread, the idea that the Han Chinese are a unified people with a unified kind of history and culture and maybe even mission, you can see this almost all of the time. And this makes it very difficult to integrate values across this kind of gap. Now, lots of Westerners get fooled because the Chinese are very good at inviting you as a guest, treating you the way you want. They understand Western values, or at least they understand the trappings or surface actions and behaviors of those values, and you don't see a lot of the underlying parts, but they're there and they form the core values. And I think something that really made me respect Martin Jack's book and his writing was that he's been in China for a while. Now, not a long time. You know, he went in there for a couple years, I think. He was in different places. He was in Taiwan. He's in Hong Kong. He was in China. And he's not a long-term stayer, but he really seems to have an ability to capture or to collect information from talking to people and then connect that with the structure that he sees and the political events he sees and the things he reads in the newspaper and the histories he reads up on. He connects it all together. So in a way, it has a kind of a Marxist analysis feel to it. You know, it's an overall, these are the trends that are happening and these are the political situations and these are the people involved. And I usually would say that's not something so great, because I would prefer to work from the ground up, but I think Martin does a great job of combining all these perspectives and bringing them across. he's really, really good at it. I'm really quite impressed with his capability. Then he goes into the book and the normal stuff. He goes over the China history, which I think every book should be outlawed from doing now. I think I'm getting really tired of hearing these histories. If you want history, you know, go to the historians like Spence. You know, don't waste your time getting a one-chapter history on China. It's really a drag. He goes through the histories, and he also goes spending a lot of chapters on the numbers, the global power, the numbers, the export of money, blah, blah, blah. And all of this stuff could have been dropped from the book easily because it distracts from the main points of the modernities and the contested modernities. He talks a little bit about China's influence, seeking influence in other places like Africa. He does have some biting commentary where he talks about race and race issues and how lots of this export is based on purely getting advantage for Chinese and Chinese companies, and that is absolutely true, and that's something that's going to be difficult for Westerners to deal with, I think, in the future. And then at the very end, he goes through a bunch of examples, and boy, at this point, I just felt like I could have just skipped the rest easily. They're really boring examples that really did not add to the book at all. So it's a bit of a mixed bag in a way. On the one hand, I'm really happy to get somebody so smart and experienced and such a good observer to be looking at this topic and presenting some very interesting perspectives. The really positive thing is the push on modernity. So if you have any intention of doing research involving Chinese consumers, definitely take a listen or read this book, because you're probably not in the right position to understand the underlying assumptions. You just come in and you think, hey, man, these are consumers, and they're going to Starbucks. So let's look at Starbucks, and let's give them a survey. And you are going to miss so much because you're just assuming values are the same. On the other hand, if you already know this, if you already got this, if you've already read other authors that kind of know their stuff just as much as insiders, I'm not sure you're going to get a whole lot out of it. And the second half of the book kind of just blasts you away trying to justify why China will, quote-unquote, rule the world. Just to quickly bounce back on this idea of China ruling the world. Now, this is a bit of a hilarious idea in some cases. Even with overall GDP growth growing, the per capita income in China is just extremely low. Even if we look at a very successful, without any problems or any roadblocks, you're talking about in the next 30 years, the average income of the Chinese consumer will still be under half of the average income of the U.S. consumer. Now, this sounds like I'm trying to put somebody down or something like that. No, I'm totally positive. I'm just saying it's a fact. So why are we going to get all upset about China taking over the world? Again, I come back to South Park and Carmen's freaking out. The Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming. So this kind of book is, on the one hand, insightful, and I love the contested modernity. But boy, I'm just worried it's part of this counter reaction to get negative and get scared, and we all wake up with nightmares in the middle of the night about the Chinese coming to take over the world, and I don't see that. Okay, so, you know, I respect the author a lot. He has some good experience. You can read up on that, his getting married, his wife. That experience I read a little bit and really gave me a lot of respect for him and his experience. I think another place that maybe a lot of foreigners don't know about, but anyone who's lived in China or even in Singapore or Taiwan or Hong Kong can quickly see, is that a race among Han Chinese is a really important thing. Check that out yourself. I dare not say more. Okay, researchers, fundamental underlying ideas of modernity, great. As far as consumer behavior, a little bit of tidbits there, but to get you pointed in the overall right direction. As far as methodology, there's nothing there. It's a disconnected kind of political analysis. And as far as directly any kind of consumer insights or stories, just a couple little things, but nothing huge. Recommended book. Hope that this is not, however, going to draw a lot of negative reaction. So enjoy. This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.